in a way that you see the glass is half full, not half empty.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we look at the last 40, 50 years of fighting for workers' rights in this country, contrary to what corporate America stakeholders and shareholders see as the value? They see mm-hmm. more going to the top. And so we know we've experienced this inequality and this wage gap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rich getting
mm-hmm.
richer, poor getting mm-hmm. poorer, middle class, we really can't define what that means anymore in real economic terms. So how do we now look at the Janus case as another opportunity for defining our value system? And that's key. And so part of it is having a conversation with others who are either like-minded or folks
yeah.
who don't even think like us, or in most cases, about certain common interests. Mm-hmm. And these common interests are permanent interests, I think.
Let me just say about, announce real quickly about mm-hmm. on August the 7th, the Night Out for Safety and Liberation is going to be August the 7th at the Irving Park. Starts at 4, from 4 to 8. I'm just going to say we're going to have a workshop on this Burgerville organizing drive.
Okay.
So that is, we're putting to action what you just been telling us. We got to do something. Take every spot we can.
That's a good
point. And talk about unionism and the things we need to be doing. A couple other announcement is that the Humboldt at Emmanuel Church are going to be bringing, again, on July the 7th, this coming Saturday, bring all your don't wants. Throwaways.
Oh, you don't want. All right.
And okay. bring them. There's a place you can put them at. And then another event, of course, as you all know, I'm a minister, but I'm also having a Vacation Bible School July the 23rd through the 27th with the intent to take these kids to union workers, police officers, firemen. We're going to take them down to city workers and county workers. So I use whatever area I can and talk about working people and let them talk to them. So that's July 23rd through 27th. And also, about our union meeting.
Thank you, Audrey. We meet on the second Tuesday of every month. Our next meeting is at 6 p.m. at the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees AFSCME William Lucy Building, located at 6025 East Burnside, Portland, Oregon. And that will be Tuesday, July 10th. I'd like to extend a huge thank you to our special guest from the University of Oregon Labor Education and Research Center, Mr. Sherman Henry, and Audrey, Ms. Audrey Terrell, for being with me. And Tina, if you're out there, we miss you and we love
yes,
you.
Yes, we do.
And
yes, we do.
For everyone else, thanks again for tuning in to our monthly segment of Labor Radio, and we will be back with you the first Monday of August on KBOO, excuse me, the first in August. I'm sorry. We're in July. KBOO.FM. Holla.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Keys Beats Bars Community Discussion on Sunday, July 8th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. Keys Beats Bars is a music program for incarcerated youth. This community discussion will be about how music empowerment can bring the community together, and to learn about volunteer opportunities and general information about Keys Beats Bars, Morpheus Youth Project, Liberation Literary, and many others. Again, that's the Keys Beats Bars community discussion on Sunday, July 8th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intention
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. This is Emma, and I'm here tonight with Jennifer Kennedy, who's going to talk to us tonight about the case of Rodney Patrick McNeil and also about the Light the Way Home campaign. Welcome, Jennifer.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. So, Jennifer, let's start off talking about Rodney Patrick McNeil. It sounds like he's been in prison a long time, and it sounds like he's got a good reason to hope that he can get out soon.
Absolutely. Rodney, and I'm going to call him Patrick because Patrick is his middle name, so that's what he goes by. So
okay.
I'll be referring to him as Patrick.
Great.
He's been in prison for 21, wrongly convicted for 21 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow, mm-hmm. That's amazing.
So, yeah, he was convicted of two counts of second-degree murder,
mm-hmm.
And he was sentenced to 30 years to life.
Well, let's talk about who Patrick is and what led up to the circumstances of his conviction.
Sure. So on March 10th, 1997, Patrick was a San Bernardino County probation officer. That county is in California. His pregnant wife was going for a doctor's appointment at lunch and had called him earlier to ask if he could take his lunch hour to do so. So he said, of course, yes, I'll come home and take you to that doctor's appointment. So he actually went down an elevator with two other colleagues, and they asked him to go to lunch. And he had said, no, I have to take my wife to a doctor's appointment. And so he left his work, and about 8 to 10 minutes later, he arrived home and walked into the house, and it was ransacked. And he thought that maybe they had been robbed. The entire house was ransacked, and he was calling his wife's name. She wasn't coming. He was walking through the house, went through the master bedroom, followed a trail of blood, and found her in the bathtub, murdered.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So he literally was in the house for 1 minute, couldn't find a phone because the house had been ransacked so badly, went over to a neighbor's house and called 911. Police arrived. Police arrived within 5 minutes. They declared her dead within 15 minutes. And he was a father of two other children with a different woman, and so he was a father, he was a homeowner, he was a probation officer, he was a graduate student in international studies, and on that day changed his entire life.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So,
that's must have been so traumatizing.
From the very beginning, they always look, especially, you know, many years ago, they always look at the husband as being the first suspect, and they honestly didn't look at anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 9 months later, he was convicted of the crime. He was arrested. So he's been fighting for this since the day he walked into prison. He thought, oh, I'll be here for 24 hours or I'll be here for 48 hours. They'll get it all straightened out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been 21 years. So, and he was arrested for two counts of murder because, of course, she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, while he's been in prison, he wrote his own habeas corpus, been fighting for himself, applied to be with the California Innocence Project. And in 2008, he was accepted with the California Innocence Project. And he is now considered as one of the California 12. And these are 12 individuals who the Southern California Innocence Project has brought to Governor Brown to say, we have gone through their case over and over and over again, and we can tell you that he's innocent. And they go through their cases with a fine-tooth comb, and they only consider 1% of the people that apply. and they took his case the first time. And
he, it sounds like he was a really upstanding citizen. Had mm-hmm. he ever had any convictions or?
No, so nothing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing. And so as they took him to court, as the Innocence Project took him to court, they found out that there were people that were starting to talk. And two people were taken to court, and they asked who did it. And for the sake of this radio show, I am not going to say this person's name on the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I... it's not appropriate. This person has not been convicted of the crime yet, so I'm going to refrain from saying the person's name. But if anybody wants to find the details of this case, they can certainly go on the CaliforniaInnocenceProject.org and look under Rodney Patrick McNeil, and it talks about all the names.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to court, and two people went on the stand, and they said, "Hey, this person told me that they committed the crime." And then another person said, "Hey, this person told me they committed the crime." So we now have two people that have come forward that said that somebody else committed the crime.
Mm-hmm.
So Patrick also had a court-appointed lawyer. Didn't do the best job in the world for him, and found out that there was a lot of stuff that was from the original case that the lawyer had but did not use,
mm-hmm.
such as a rigor mortis report that was done with the coroner's office. So when the coroner's office got there 15 minutes after the murder, they declared her officially dead. But they also said in the report that she was in late rigor mortis. Late rigor mortis mm-hmm. does not set in 15 minutes.
Right.
So there would be no way that he, if they put him at the scene of the crime when they said they did, it wouldn't even match up for the rigor mortis part
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so after many years, you know, the Innocence Project has worked with Patrick, taken him to court many different times for different things, and have tried to continue to work on his case. And about 3 years ago, I guess it was, they literally took these California 12 cases, and the lawyers from the California Innocence Project wanted to do something outstanding, and they walked from San Diego, California, which is in Southern California, to Sacramento, which is in Northern California, 700 miles.
Oh, so they did like a vigil. Mm-hmm.
Right, and they walked with these cases up to the Capitol to give the Capitol, to give Governor Brown these cases, and that's mm-hmm. how passionate they were about these 12 cases.
Mm-hmm.
So since Patrick has been in prison for 21 years, his two older children, they were 3 and 6 when he went in, and they are now 21 and 26.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they're fully grown. Ago,
mm-hmm. 2 years ago, his 21-year-old died in her sleep.
Oh, no.
So she was not allowed to even go to her funeral.
Oh, gosh, that's terrible.
Yeah. So he is now a grandfather and has never been allowed to meet his granddaughter. But through this time, I'm an advocate for people that are going through this, and I've never met anybody that has not been so uninstitutionalized because he was a probation officer. He knew what it was like inside prison. He knew what the system was like. He knew all that other stuff. And he has done everything in his power to try to keep himself, never getting in trouble, not getting in a gang, taking every class he could possibly take. He's earned 5 college degrees.
Wow.
He's always kept a job.
Where is he? He's
in Tehachapi, California.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's really tried to take the time that he has there and do something productive. And he works with a program called GOGI, which is going out, getting in.
We've had them on our show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's been instrumental in getting that program to Tehachapi, making that program in Tehachapi, being the representative there. So he's really done, you know, so much. In the state of California, inmates, wrongful conviction inmates or other inmates, do get out at Christmas and Easter of every year. That's been the tradition of the governor. And we were hoping that it was going to happen this Easter, but it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And his name has been on the governor's desk for 7 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So waiting for the governor to make some, you know, to hear his case and to hear his plea, to realize that, you know, that he did not do the crime.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that's Patrick's story. That's quite a story.
Patrick's story.
Yeah. And do you know Patrick personally?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, he's one of my best friends. And I'm in awe of him, that he can go through every day being behind bars and having such a positive outlook and always trying to turn the negative into the positive, and, you know, and always having hope that he will have his day out, and always thinking ahead and always, you know, saying, this is, you know, this is not who I am. You
mm-hmm.
know, this is a temporary housing. He calls it a temporary housing, you know, area for him. So he's always ready to think about what he wants to do for the rest of his life and, you know, whatever. So absolutely.
Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. you know, and people are exonerated and released.
Mm-hmm.
We've had several guests on this show over the years who have been in roles such as you, who have been advocates and who have worked really hard and have successfully seen people that they love and that they care about and that they're concerned about, who have been wrongfully convicted,
mm-hmm.
released. So, you know, there's definitely hope.
Yeah, there's definitely hope. There's definitely hope. We've had some good news this year, which I can't say on the radio, but it's good news. It means that we might be able to go back to court, which is always a good thing to be able to do that. So that's been good. So he's ready to come home.
Mm-hmm.
He's ready to meet his granddaughter. He's ready to develop that relationship with his daughter again. He's ready to be an outstanding citizen and to, you know, to get a good job. And yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah,
absolutely.
Wow. When his wife died, did his unborn child die too?
Yes.
Wow, that's terrible.
Yes.
But he has, yeah. but he has a surviving daughter and he has some grandchildren.
Right. So he has one surviving daughter, one grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he does have some family out here. He has another friend of ours that has also been very involved with his case. You know, so he has people that have supported him, you know, also online, you know, always supporting him online. He's not the manager of his Facebook site. I am, but definitely they want to know about him and what he does and, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, they support him as well.
Now, mm-hmm. What was the Innocence Project able to find to show that Patrick was wrongfully convicted? Was it the testimony of the two
yeah.
people who?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was the testimony of two people, of those two people. It was also a lot of, as I talked about, the lawyer not doing what he was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, it was the timing of these reports. It was actually that there is no DNA connecting him to the crime.
Mm-hmm.
The timeline does not match.
Mm-hmm.
The people that saw him in the elevator that said, do you want to go to, you know, do you want to go to lunch with me, would have, you know, they were there when he left for lunch. So they managed to get him to the house at a certain time. But now you throw in the rigor mortis thing, and that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so there's nothing, they never found any bloody clothes because she was stabbed 16 times.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of blood, and he never had any blood on him.
Mm-hmm.
They never found any blood on him. They never found clothes. They never found DNA. The timeline doesn't match. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It sounds like it was probably an interrupted robbery. Is that what they think it was?
No. No, they don't. They know who did it.
Mm-hmm.
They know who did it. And so, you know, in my opinion, I think that the house was ransacked to make it look like a robbery.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
But it was intentional.
Right.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we'll have to wait to find out about that after Patrick is exonerated. So let's talk about the Light the Way Home campaign.
Sure. So in 2015, I wanted to come up with something that would be able to highlight the thousands and thousands of people that are wrongly convicted. As I started to get to know Patrick, and he's like, this can happen to anyone at any time, and all this other stuff, and started to have people become friends of his on Facebook, and all these wrongful conviction people. I thought, wow, this is an epidemic. I mean, so many people are hid behind these bars, and people are starting very slowly to understand that somebody can be wrongly convicted. And so I wanted to do something that the whole nation could do, and I wanted to do something that was going to be very easy. So I came up in 2015 called Light the Way Home, and I started it at Christmas time. And basically what I asked family and friends of people that were wrongly convicted is to take one night, and my first time I did it in December maybe was 2 weeks before Christmas, and to put your light on, your outside light on, and leave it on all night long, just in case your loved one came home that night. It was to light the way home. So I started this in December, and then I did it in July for Independence Day. And so I started this in 2015, so we've been doing this for about 3 years. So it's about every 6 months that we do it. And last December, we had about people from about, I think it is 35 different states that put their lights on. And on that night, what they do is they take a picture of their light, and they put it on Patrick's Facebook site. And so then I have a map of the United States. And so if you say that your light is from Maine, I'll put a star on Maine or New Jersey or Florida. So night starts to happen in the East Coast, I start mapping where these lights are, and people can see them go literally across the country. And so people have really caught on to this. So I said last time we had 35 different states, and we had 7 different countries. People from other countries saying, we'll turn our lights on for the wrongly convicted. And so people put on their lights. Some people may not have a light, so they'll turn on a candle. I had a gentleman who said that he had a floor outside place where plants grew, and he had left the lights on at his business all night. So I got a picture of that. One time I got a picture of somebody that was in Alaska, where the land, where it doesn't get dark. So this is the only online campaign that I know about for the wrongly convicted. And it is something that almost anybody can do. As I said, we do it every December and every July. So this is going to be our 9th time doing it, I think. And people have already signed up for it. It's going to be in about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's on July 6th this year. And if anybody wants to participate, they can go and search on Facebook something called Light the Way Home.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Facebook event site. So then you can just say, yes, I want to participate. People can put their pictures of their lights on that event page, or if they're friends of Patrick, they can put it on his page as well. And then I, throughout the night, calculate where they're coming from so that we can calculate how many states participate.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so great. What inspired you to do that?
Just because I thought, wow, what is, you know, like, how can I get all these people together? You know, what can I do for all of these people? Because I started to realize that there was sort of so many people, you know, that this has happened to, you know, and different stories. And, you know, when Patrick became the part of the California 12, I started reading the 12 that, you know, the different stories. And I thought, wow, there has to be something we can do. So we will continue to do this. I vow to continue to do this until every single wrongly convicted person comes home. And also, I'm hoping that when Patrick comes home, he can be live on Facebook. He doesn't even know what Facebook is, believe it or not.
Right.
He is. So, but he can be live on Facebook and help me to continue to do this, you know, and hopefully by, you know, then I always say I want to hit 50 states. That's my goal this year, is to have a representative from every single state submit a picture of a light. And as I said, some people use candles, they use lights inside of their house, porch lights, any light will work. But that's my goal, is to get all 50 states on July 6th.
Mm-hmm. July 6th. Mm-hmm. And that's is that a Saturday night?
It's a Friday night.
Friday night. Got it.
Yep, it's a Friday night. And I started it at 4 p.m. Just because, well, probably by Eastern time at 8 o'clock, it will start to get dark. And then it will just sweep across the country. And luckily, I live in California, so I'm one of the last lights. I get to see all the lights as they go across. And then about 10 o'clock at night, I poop out. And then while I'm asleep, Hawaii comes in, and a few extra ones come in. So, but
Hawaii, yeah, too. Really, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it really turns out to be a great evening to just see how many people want to support these. You know, people sometimes decorate their porches. I've seen pictures with their names on it, and people really go all out. Some people will just turn on a light, but some people have done really, really, really fun things with the light.
Oh, that's great. Like, what have they done with the lights?
Well, they might put something like on their front door, you know, wrongful conviction of so-and-so, put the name, or, you know, people have, you know, put out, made signs, banners, you know, so they really have started to become very creative with what they do. So right now I'm looking at it, and I have 180 people going, and I have 123 people interested.
Mm-hmm.
So as we get closer and closer, it will just get more and more.
And that's and that's called the Light the Way Home campaign. It's Facebook.
Right. So just do the search for Light the Way Home in the search bar, and you'll see the invitation. And everyone is invited. Even if you don't know anybody that's wrongly convicted, we certainly would love to have your support.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll definitely do it, because I know several people who have been wrongly convicted, because I've talked to them over the years, either in person or on the radio. And I've met people who have been on death row and who have been released. And it's so, being inside is so traumatic. I don't think that people on the outside understand how traumatizing it is to be inside, especially if you know that you're innocent. But one of the things that I've heard over the years, talking to people who have been exonerated or who have done really long terms, is that if they know that they're innocent, they have this inner resilience. They have this inner strength, mm-hmm. that keeps them going through the whole indignity and the injustice of prison. And it's because they have a clean conscience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that when you go for board, one of the things is that they want you to admit that your crime. They want you to, you know, they want to know that they have rehabilitated you. And Patrick has said, I will never, ever admit this crime.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. So, you know, yes, has he taken classes in prison that he would have never taken on the outside? Absolutely. Has he done some things in prison that he's never would have never done in other, like, he's in an HVAC class. Would he ever done that on the outside? No. But, you know, so, but he'll never admit the crime. And yes, I do think that people that are wrongly convicted have that extra, what do I want to say, fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in prison many times as a visitor, and it is horrendous.
Yeah.
Even as a visitor, we are treated
like criminals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like criminals. Mm-hmm. You know, how dare you know of somebody that might be in here?
Right.
So I can't imagine living that life day in and day out.
Yeah. It's very intimidating. It really can be. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. So that's July 6th. It's the Light the Way Home campaign. And it's for Patrick. Let's Just we've got about 4 minutes left in the show, okay. So I just want to make sure that I cover all the bases. There was one thing I wanted to get to before we're done with our interview, and that's mm-hmm. that one of the things that you do in your campaign that's really interesting to me is that you talk about how many people are possibly wrongfully convicted in mm-hmm. federal and state prisons in the United States. Mm-hmm. You bring up the statistic that according to the Innocence Project, approximately one in every 25 people on death row is most likely wrongfully convicted.
Yes.
And
if 1%, did you have those statistics?
Yes,
as well?
Yes, I did see that. Yep. And I mean, I think that it's entirely reasonable to say that there's a high likelihood that there are at least 20,000 people in the prison system in the United States, considering there are 3 million people who are currently incarcerated in the United States, either in state or mm-hmm. federal prisons or county jails. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, that's 20,000 people. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people that are mm-hmm. wrongly convicted. Mm-hmm. And that's just 1%. If they estimate just 1%. So it may even be higher than that.
Yeah.
You know, wrongful convictions can be anything from a lineup to misunderstanding to lying to, I mean, there's many different ways you can be wrongly mm-hmm. convicted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many. So we've just got about 1 minute left. I was actually off a little bit. The Light the Home campaign, that's going to be July 6th, and they can find it on Facebook where?
Right. So find it on Facebook. Go on to Facebook. It's called Light the Way Home.
Uh-huh. And it's an event.
It's an event.
Uh-huh.
So it's a public event. So you can just go on, search it, Light the Way Home, and you can certainly just sign